Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White. I'm a registered medium here at Lilydale, and this is my weekly show that happens on Wednesdays at 10 a.m., so you can tune in live if you wish on my Facebook page, which is Willa White Medium. You can also catch it later as it posts on my Facebook page or look in the archive videos for past shows. It's a wonderful opportunity for you to come and hear my spiritual conversation with my different guests who have different spiritual topics having to do with spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. And I really enjoy doing this show. There's another way that you can tune in if you go to blogtalkradio.com/lilydaleradio. That's a listen-only, audio-only version of the show that you can access online. So lots of ways for you to take part in Lilydale and listen in. So I'm really excited about our topic today. Today's topic is mental health and healing, and I have as my special guest today, Dot McCarthy. Thanks for being on the show today,
You're
Dot.
Welcome. You're welcome.
She was here last month, and we had a great time chatting. So if you guys want to look back in the archive videos for when Dot was here last, I think you'd really enjoy hearing about A Course in Love.
That's right.
And today's topic is mainly generated because Dot is a psychiatric nurse. Well, she retired now.
Right. I'm retired.
And she has lived here in Lilydale many years.
Almost 20 years. I've been Kevin almost 30.
Great. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. You have. And she is just one of the most volunteering, compassionate souls I've ever met. So, I'm appointing her for sainthood.
I'll take it. Yes. I'll take anything I can get at this age.
Yes. And I'm so glad that you'll be able to share some of your experiences as a psychiatric nurse and maybe a little bit about your background with that.
Okay.
And we'll start with that first, and then you can share some of your spiritual experiences with mental health
with
and healing.
Okay. Yes. Because there was a point in my life when I came to Lilydale for spiritual classes and was able to take that back to my profession in mental health.
Nice.
So that was wonderful. But I was raised in Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, and I went to nurses training at the Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. Back then it was a 3-year program.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I graduated, I got married and moved to Boston for a year. My husband was a professional basketball player.
Ooh.
And then after a year there, we came to Buffalo, which was his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started having children. So I had 5 children, and so I didn't work during that period of time. But then after the children, I think my youngest might have been 3, there was a local outpatient mental health clinic that we're going to start training paralegals. Like paralegals, they're going to be paraprofessionals in counseling and counseling techniques. And so I set up this program. I think there was about 20 of us in the program, and they brought psychiatrists and psychologists and trained us for years to do counseling techniques and diagnosing. And so then we started at the Hamburg Counseling Center in Hamburg, and I stayed there for 28 years.
Mm.
So I loved it.
Yes.
And you know, in mental health, you always have your supervisor. Everybody has a supervisor when they work. And anytime you have a difficult client or a client that you want to talk about what direction you're going to be going in, you can do that on a weekly basis with your supervisor. So the Hamburg Counseling Center was unique in that it was partially funded by the county. It's also Erie County there. And also partially funded by the Hamburg, we had a board. So it was unique in that we weren't completely a county facility. It was double.
Double.
And so our board's responsibility was to raise funds, you know. And so it was nice. It was nice because you had people right on board with you that were interested in running the clinic. And so the Hamburg Counseling Center was an agency right in Hamburg, and we got our clients several ways. One, somebody would call in for service.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you would have a family member calling in, or a wife or a husband for marital counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had referrals from the hospital. And so usually when somebody is discharged from the hospital is looking for a mental health agency to connect them and to follow through on their mental health and also on their medication.
Mm-hmm.
So Hamburg got those, that's how we got our clientele, those different ways. So as a therapist there, you know, twice a week we had what we call intake, and that was where we would talk about all the people that were referred that week,
mm-hmm.
and then they were assigned to different therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because sometimes if you were interested in a particular case, you could say, I'd like to have that case.
Or, volunteer for that one.
Yeah. Or if they felt somebody was especially good with personality disorders, they might want to take that. But we tried to make it balanced so not everybody has real tough cases.
Sure, yeah.
And some cases are tougher than others to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very fair. The people there were wonderful. So I stayed there for 28 years before I came out to Chautauqua County and worked in Mayville Jail for 6 years.
Yeah.
And that was my history.
In the prison
yes,
there.
Yeah. To the prison. And I've been retired for quite a while.
Yeah. Enjoying retirement.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but
definitely.
Still working very hard for Lily Jones.
Oh, definitely. You know, you can always use mental health skills with dealing with people every day. That's not a problem. People are people.
people are coming
in for counseling or whether you're dealing with them on a day-to-day basis, you know.
Yeah.
But I loved my job. I was one of those fortunate people that never minded going to work.
Which is something.
Now, I mean, if they give me a day off, I would take it.
Sure.
I don't mean that. But I love going to work. I love the people I work with. And that makes it even better.
Yeah, because you're having to deal with a certain part of the population that has a very distinct need.
That's exactly
and
right.
And a gentle,
that's
but
right.
loving but firm
yes,
touch.
Yes. So you're giving during the day. And it's like anything else, you know. Some days you don't have time to even think, much less jot down a few notes, which is required.
Yes.
And so when you're in between or when in between time when you've got a good staff that is supportive. So I have stayed friends with a person that's my supervisor.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, to this day. We are very good friends. And,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So in that realm of mental health, you had different experiences that kind of stand out in your own mind that were very healing.
Well, one of the things that happened, the person I mentioned, the supervisor, Norina,
mm-hmm.
the two of us came together to take Fellowship of the Spirit class.
Uh-huh.
And so we came to... Well, it was really in Lilydale at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Norina stayed for the first year. She ended up getting pregnant, so she didn't finish the second year, but she had good reason. So I went on to finish the second year. But in that first year, we were learning about color. We were
mm-hmm.
learning about sound. We were learning by picking up vibrations. We were healing and mediumship. And so because we worked together, we would go back on Monday, and we would talk about it at work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then our program director, Dave Isbell, who's a wonderful person who's now passed in spirit, Dave was very allowing, and he allowed us to teach the classes that we were taught.
Mm.
And then we went one step further, and we were going to teach meditation to the community, the Hamburg community.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a seminar in color. We did a seminar in meditation. We just had a wonderful time. And for me to be able to discuss that, not only in my personal life, but in my professional life,
mm-hmm.
was wonderful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just another tool in your toolbox,
absolutely.
I think. And so that tool I used in counseling. And what I realized, not at the time, but just a little bit, I did eventually realize I was using my intuitive nature in therapy.
Yeah.
And I was able to pick up on people a lot faster. Not that I didn't do the regular routine of assessments and everything, but there was an extra skill there.
Yeah.
And sometimes, to be very honest, I would say something and I would think, I didn't realize I knew that. So I knew that.
It kind of come out of your mouth.
I knew that I was being inspired.
Yeah. Can you give us some specifics?
You know, I'll tell you why I can't do that. Is because I didn't realize it when it happened. It was only
as I got away.
Once in a while it would be right then, but it would not be anything that would be so specific to their treatment that it would be a complete turnaround. I don't
mm-hmm.
mean that. But it might be an example. It might be a summary of what they said in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I did realize there was some added skills there.
Yeah, the benefit
that happened.
That.
Mm-hmm. But I can't think of one particular person that, you know. But it just happened. It happened gradually.
Yes.
And then I went on to finish the second year at school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I graduated, Jesse First and I, we were in the first class at 12th Shift. That was our claim to fame. We were the first class
mm-hmm.
30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
We mentored. We went back to the school for 2 years, but we went there as mentors.
Right.
So we continued our education, but in helping the class that was coming up behind us. And so that was fun, doing that a different way. But, you know, I'd come every weekend, and then Monday I'd be right back at work, and I'm thinking, I don't know if I can keep doing this. It was like never having a break. You know?
Oh, that's
but
true.
But it was worthwhile. It was
mm-hmm.
worthwhile. But so then after I finished the class, I used to bring my family out here all the time
mm-hmm.
when I would find something exciting in the class or exciting through a reading, I would call my family and they started having a desire to want to come. So they,
sure.
they started coming here to Hamburg Counseling Center. So what happened is I got to know Elaine Thomas and Mark Thomas by coming to the school. And I also had a problem with my back at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I had a ruptured disc and I had trouble sitting in class. And so Elaine had just had Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Thomas. And so when Elaine would be carrying him, sometimes I would not be able to sit too long. And so we had one of those, I don't know what the
baby
name.
Baby carriers.
Yeah,
probably.
Where they're facing you.
Yes, yes.
And so I would put that on and walk out.
So you'd be a little bit of a nanny.
So I was a babysitting Jason.
Yes.
Yeah, not just then, but during after school.
Sure.
And sometimes I'd go and stay with him for the weekend. So the nice thing is when it got time for Jason to be married, he said to his mother, I only want Dot to marry me.
Aw,
so,
that's
it was my first wedding.
Like minister,
well, it was
too.
My first wedding.
Yeah.
Yes, my
very
sisters
cool.
have my sisters have gone through the school.
Wonderful.
And my son Joe and my nieces have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have married people, but I had never. So when
that
Jason,
was a nice thing.
Oh,
to
when
do.
Jason asked me to marry him, I said, "Of course, I will do that."
So in your role as a psychiatric nurse, and in dealing with that particular population.
Yes.
And as you and I were talking about before the show, when we were planning this, you said that there were some spiritual experiences you had with people in their mental health healing.
Yeah. But that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
That was the insights.
Yeah.
The insights that came very gentle because I had a little problem with mediumship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was resistive. I was resistive only in that I didn't trust.
Mm.
I, you know.
And so that's an essential part.
Yeah. I didn't trust that they would be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did is they waited till I was in my counseling role, which I totally trusted myself in that role.
Sure.
And that's when they started making a difference.
So you were feeling spirit presence.
Oh, yes, definitely.
When you were working with patients.
Yes, yes.
And were you feeling your own and theirs, or just theirs? Or?
Well, no, I think it was a combination, because I had worked there for years. And so, you know, as you work, you have a routine that you have, you know, a basic routine. But in mental health, and I was going to mention that to you, in mental health, when someone comes in, no matter which way they're referred in, you do a mental health assessment. And in mental health, they feel you have 16 life areas. And if you're doing well in all those 16 life areas, you are considered mentally healthy.
Nice.
Now, when a client comes in, whether they're coming in for a follow-up from the hospital, you're still going to do the same. You get information from the hospital, but you're going to do your own evaluation.
So what do you feel that they were referred the most for?
All different diagnoses.
Like what would those be? Depression?
Major depression, where they're being on medication.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's with suicidal thoughts, sometimes not.
Right, okay.
Severe anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
They can also go hand in hand, anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your major mental health diagnosis, paranoid schizophrenia, bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a variety of all the diagnoses, suicidal acting out, suicidal attempts, you know, without a psychiatric diagnosis.
Right.
So you're getting, the hospital does the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your assessment is to also to have a diagnosis when that person comes in. The insurance companies insist, and the county insists.
It's
that
all
they
documented.
They have to have a mental health, because
that's,
you base your treatment on, this is the diagnosis, this is the treatment suggested, and this is what we're going to do. And so as you go through your assessment, you know, you're learning about that person. You're asking all these questions, and they're also giving you information without asking, but you do need to make sure that in all those areas of their life, you mark the ones that they're not doing well in.
Right.
And that might not be why they came in, but you see that there's a lot of problems.
Right.
In there.
So it's beyond the initial diagnosis.
Exactly. And, you know, physically, when you're thinking about someone that's depressed and they say, I'm having trouble eating and sleeping, you got to find out what those problems are.
Right.
If you've gained weight and it's 5 pounds, you know, that's one thing. If they've gained 30 in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So those assessments are important to find out exactly what kind of symptoms they have.
Sure.
If they're not sleeping, maybe they don't get to bed and sleep till 12.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're up all night, that makes a difference.
Did you feel that some of what you were doing unconsciously and maybe consciously was spiritual counseling as well? For their spirit, too?
Oh,
Just the mind and emotion.
Yeah. Well, see, I think in counseling, you know that person, this is where the spiritual part comes in.
Yeah.
You see that person, not that you didn't see that as a person before, but you see the spiritual aspects of that person.
The soul of them.
And you see the strengths. Now, you know, I feel that I've always felt in counseling that I saw the strengths in people.
Mm-hmm.
That so many times when people are beaten down and some horrific things that have happened to them, inside them, there's the strength for them to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And they need support. They need loving attention.
Through that trauma.
And sometimes they need medication.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they need the psychiatrist to evaluate them.
Mm-hmm.
But your job as a therapist, I think that's one of the things that was helpful. And I definitely saw that by the time I got to the jail, because I had never worked with that clientele before.
Okay.
And so I got to know Mark Thomas, and he was county executive out here at the time, and he said, why don't you come out here and work? And I said, well, find me a nice job that I am willing to let go of this wonderful job I have. So he did. He started looking for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, how about in the jail? I said, in the jail? I've never even known anybody that was in jail.
Okay.
And so he said, well, there's an opening. And I think that's another thing. We're becoming spiritual. It was time. I listened to my insights. I had a wonderful office. I had been there a long time, had a wonderful position in the agency, respected, you know.
Yeah.
So I was leaving a comfort zone. And so that's, again, where the spiritual aspect came in. It was mm-hmm. like people said, we thought you would never leave because you
had a fixture there.
Long.
Yes.
And even other people in other agencies. God, Dot's leaving? Dot's leaving Hamburg. I was there when it started, see?
Oh.
So Mark sent me this thing for the jail in Mayville as a psychiatric nurse. And the other thing that was happening in mental health was the insurance companies were starting to become very involved in treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a problem in this way. The insurance companies started dictating how many times you could see a person, even if they were suicidal. You know, you have 7 visits to see this person.
And then
time is up. You better have another assessment and call us and justify more sessions. And they would give it out 3 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was struggling.
Yeah.
And because everybody was struggling, we were trying to find the language they needed for us to communicate with them. That
sure.
was the problem. Some therapists found it easier to get sessions. And so we said, well, what kind of language, what are you using to assess, and not just assess, but to communicate with these people?
And what were they doing?
What we did is we just sat down with that therapist and found out the terminology, and we started all using the same terminology.
And
it got better.
It got better.
But it was difficult because the insurance companies were becoming so involved, and so now you're working hard to see your clients, and you're taking so much of your time to be not only writing but calling and
following up and all of that.
So
yeah.
that was happening at that time, and I thought, well, maybe that's just that little push that I needed to maybe look for another job.
And so then when you moved into the prison, what was that like? Because you're having to deal with people that have come
in. Well, not only that, I had to sell my house.
Right.
I had to move here because it was a move that was going to be, well, what happened, the first thing I did, I had an interview, and I didn't even know where Mayville was. And on the way out, I got lost. I said, well, I didn't get lost, but I thought I was lost because I was driving and driving and driving.
Right, right.
And I stopped a man on a snowmobile. I said, do you know where Mayville is?
This
oh,
is
sure.
snowmobile country.
Yeah. Oh, just keep going here and turn here. And, you know, they give you directions. I turn here at the deli. So I was
you
a little late
it.
For my first interview. So I sat down and talked to them and they said they would get back to me, and so they called me back and said, we'd like you to start. And they gave me a little tour of the jail, and I was thinking, well, is this really something I want to do? Anyhow,
as far as the patients go that you were
It was seeing. A complete different. Now, this is different because there's the only way a person comes into the Mayville jail is through booking because they've been arrested.
Right.
That's a way different than an outpatient mental health agency.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
So here is the process. A person 16 and above is arrested, and they end up at the Mayville jail. In the Mayville jail, booking, of course, is open 24 hours. And as they come in, there is an assessment by the booking officer.
Mm-hmm.
And in that assessment, there's mental health questions.
Sure.
Medication. Have you ever been in counseling? Are you suicidal? All
mm-hmm.
those kinds of questions. Well, when those red flags go up,
right.
they are referred to mental health.
And that's where you come
and
in.
And that's where I was working, in the mental health agency. I was the only psychiatric nurse. The other person was a drug and alcohol
mm-hmm.
counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be referred to us. Now, sometimes what would happen, especially the young men, they would be scared about being in jail. Sometimes it was their first time. They were really scared, and they would say, I'm going to kill myself. And as soon as they started threatening suicide, they could not go upstairs in the cells. They had to be kept downstairs until I came. So I said it was one of the jobs. The officers used to meet me at the door. Oh, we can't wait to see you. We've got 3 people here.
3 people.
And I said,
saying that.
I have never been at a working situation that they're waiting for me at the door. They can't wait till I'm getting to get there. But
yeah.
they needed to be assessed before they could be cleared and go upstairs.
So in terms of dealing with them, in the sense of helping them through their suicidal thoughts, what could you do on a spiritual level to help them?
Well, first of all, one of the things
not just
I
a
found,
practical level.
Yes,
a spiritual
one of the
level.
Things I found that was very helpful for me is that, to be honest, I don't know if it was my office,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was the lighting, but I always saw the aura
okay.
of every inmate that came into my office.
Wow.
And believe me, it wasn't a lot of color. It was just white around them. And it made me look at them, of course, much different.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm talking, you know, talking about looking at them. Some of them were hardcore.
Yeah.
They'd been in there before for some serious crimes. Some of them were there because they stole a jet ski, you know.
Oh, right,
took
right.
a joyride and got caught. So there's all levels. But when you see an aura around a person, it puts them all on the same level, which is a spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for the young men, sometimes I would just say to them, I would evaluate them and what they were saying as far as suicidal. Most times they were just afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed a lot of reassurance that I would go and be there, and they could send me a note if they needed me.
Ah.
I didn't make it a habit of going upstairs.
You were like the den mother.
Not only that, I was 60.
Yeah.
You know, so their mothers were probably a lot younger than me.
They saw you as a mother,
yeah,
grandmother.
They did.
Yes.
And sometimes I would say to them, does your mother know where you're at? No.
Aww.
I said, do you want to call her? So I would let them call their mothers and tell them where they were at. And you would just see them. And they used to say, I don't know what you do over there, but every time they come back, they're always settled down. But you tell them, if they had mental health problems, you hook them up. I mean, I
sure.
would keep them and eventually have them see the psychiatrist. I worked with a psychiatrist once a week there.
Right.
And so that was very helpful. And I think that was that spiritual opening that certainly allowed that to happen, because they eventually had to go in and go up. Now, they could always write me a little note, and the correctional officers would send them down, and I could go up. I would go upstairs and just talk to them through the bars.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happened when I went to the jail, they opened up to mental health people that we could go and take mental health correctional officer training.
Oh.
So they said, now, if you took that training along with other people that were coming in to be correctional officers, you could transport your own prisoners. Now, one of the things that takes up a lot of time for correctional officers are trying to get people down to your office.
Point A,
forth.
Point B, yes.
So taking correctional officer training meant we sat in the evening
mm-hmm.
for the classes, and it meant that we could go upstairs and get our own inmates and bring them downstairs,
mm-hmm.
and that would.
Because you know how to
transport
stop them.
Well, we
from
had
doing
to.
Bad things to
yeah,
you.
Right.
I can't imagine you like a ninja. I know.
Oh
how.
My!
That was a ninja.
Well, the nice thing is, if I wanted to see somebody, I would go up. I'd call the correctional officers. No, and I would say, I'm going to come up and get so-and-so. I'm going to bring them down for an hour and talk to them, and they'll be fine. You know,
yeah.
the young 16-year-old. So that was really nice
so
for us
you,
and for
them.
So
you, as an older lady, knew how to take down a 16-year-old.
Well, you got to remember, I had a camera in my office.
Oh, that helped.
And if there was any problem, if I had somebody, say there was somebody that a high risk, maybe somebody that had murdered somebody.
Right.
They didn't want me
transferring
him. I mean, the correctional officer would bring him, and the correctional officer would sit in outside my office, the door closed, but
sure.
outside my office until the man was ready to go. Plus, there was a camera.
Now, when you were with, let's say, a murderer, did you feel an energetic difference in them?
I always looked at them as people.
Sure.
I never.
Did you ever? Because I feel, I've noticed in my own work, energy doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
A person can verbally lie or whatever, you know, body language, whatever they do, but energy doesn't lie. And you can really sense the truth when you focus on the energy of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've just done something And onto that level or degree, yes, you maybe you try to focus on their soul, but did you feel an energetic difference in them?
No, because I never looked at them.
You never looked at them that way.
I never judged them.
Even if they
never
killed someone.
Never. Wow. I don't know. First of all, I don't know the particulars.
Sure.
I know people that, you know, jail is a place where mental health people end up sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's because sometimes people take advantage of them in the community. They're the ones that get caught. They don't always know what they're getting into, and sometimes they do, you know.
Right.
But so it wasn't my job to judge them. They were here right after they were arrested. They
yeah.
might be proven innocent. I don't know that.
Right. Right.
So I never had to get into that judgment.
Right.
One of the things about in the jail is, it sounds funny to say this, but jail people are always looking for their advantages.
That's what I'm
the
thinking.
The social path.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they saw me as somebody that they maybe could get medication
to manipulate.
From.
Yeah.
Oh, they could get medication from. They
were nice.
Than me. Oh, they knew I was nice.
Yeah.
They all knew I was nice. I mean, I had to get tough with a few of them because they got mouthy, and I would just really. And when I would do that, the rest of them would be like, "You talk to her that way."
Oh.
So yeah. So, and again, I was 60. I was grandmother, mother, you
yes.
know. But I was also the authority in the jail. So, but anyhow, what they did is they saw me as someone that could maybe get some medication for them. So I knew that, you know.
Yes.
And sometimes I would go up on the floor to talk to one of the mental health people. And they'd say, "Why is she talking to you? What are you getting from her?" That kind of thing. So they would say, they call me Dot. Dot, I hear voices. I said, "What kind of voices do you hear?" And they would come up with something. I'd say, "No, those are the wrong kind."
So you know that they were lying about it.
Oh, yeah.
I see a question on Facebook.
Yes.
Someone has, Dot, please talk about people who suffer from schizophrenia and people who hear spirit. I realize schizophrenia voices tend to be negative. Can you please discuss your experiences?
One in particular comes to mind.
Thanks for your question, Barbara.
Barbara?
Yeah.
Well, Barbara, there was a lady that came in, and because I evaluate them before they see the psychiatrist, she came from the hospital, referred from the hospital for medication because of hearing voices.
Mm-hmm.
So her diagnosis was, I don't know if they had put schizophrenia, but because it was her first hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
But it was serious enough that she was being referred for medication and counseling.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was talking to her, there was some background in mediumship that I was aware of that she had shared. And also, I was talking to her. I always ask people what kind of voices, what are they saying, you
sure.
know, who do you think it's somebody you know, that type of thing. And I was getting a real strong sense. And again, we say maybe we're inspired to know that there's something different here.
Mm-hmm.
So the psychiatrist I worked with at that time was Dr. Gupta, and I had talked to him about coming to Lilydale.
Mm-hmm.
And he always had an interest, but he said, "My wife doesn't want me to go for a reason," but that's what his answer was. But he liked to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So that client had a meeting with Dr. Gupta, but I went in and I sat down with the doctor, and I said, "You know, doctor, I kind of have a suspicion that this woman is psychic, and the voices that she's hearing are not symptoms of schizophrenia. I just want to know if you'd look at her and evaluate her in that way."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Okay, but I would like to see her alone." Now, I sat in with every client that the psychiatrist saw. So I not only saw my clients, but I saw everybody's in the agency, their clients,
right.
that were on medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So in case there was something, I would know exactly what happened in that session.
Right.
So I said, "Oh, fine." So I went out of the room, brought the woman in, and she sat and talked to Dr. Gupta. And at the end of the session, he called me back in. I said, "How is she doing?" He said, "I'm not going to prescribe medication for her."
Oh.
I said, "You're not?" He said, "No." He said, "I asked her to give me a reading." And he said, "She told me about things that nobody else knew." So that's when it really... So
that's
I
a
think,
very cool one.
Oh, that was wonderful. That was wonderful. she still needed to be checked, and I think he didn't refer her for medication, and she saw another therapist. I can't remember, it's been years. But we all, at that point, you know, you start looking at hearing voices differently. These voices weren't necessarily negative. They weren't mm-hmm. telling her negative things. And so that was a win-win. But yeah. I think I can say for sure, most therapists, when they're asking people about voices, they get pretty specific with their questions about voices.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, and I'm not saying always, but sometimes they're saying to that person what that person thinks about themselves, you know, negative things. But if they're tormenting the person, that's the thing. They need medication at the time. Maybe they don't have to stay on it, but they need medication at the time. So that person can deal with their other issues. They can't deal with issues if that is happening. But a lot of times when somebody comes out of the hospital, they've been on medication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they've been medicated before. They consider them stable when they leave the hospital.
Well, things have progressed to such an extent. I feel that many people who are psychic or mediumistic are not being mislabeled schizophrenic.
I don't think that's...
I think that mental health has caught up
big
way about those things.
Definitely. This woman lived alone, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And this was just an unusual situation.
Sure.
It's an unusual. But I think with that knowledge, and one of the things that was helpful for me, when I came out and started taking classes, people with near-death experiences, they were so thrilled that I knew exactly what they were talking about.
Ah, yes.
They opened up about their experiences. They felt they weren't going to be judged because of their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the areas that I saw really very helpful, you know.
That near-death experience.
The near-death experiences that people could share, because they would hint at them and then say, you probably think I'm crazy, you know.
And I would say,
oh, of course not. Of course not. But I want to hear about your near-death experience.
Yeah.
So it opens you up. And like I say, my friend Marina and I, we continued to work until I retired, and then until I left to go and then retired. And she is now retired. But one of the other things, I will say about seeing people with hearing voices, you learn to assess them a little bit better, I guess I could say. It's an extra tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an extra tool. The spiritual part is a good tool,
mm-hmm.
but you know, if you believe in your spiritual life, then you start looking at people in general different.
And it's not like there are a lot of spirits that are trying to bombard people and make them crazy or tell
not
them to
all.
Do things. It's,
not at all.
That's it. Doesn't really work that way.
No. No. And you know, you can have people that talk about, well, they have an entity inside them. Well, that's not my job to identify that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't refer people for exorcisms and things like
very
that.
Very unlikely.
Yeah. And allow that. That would be up to somebody else to do that. But it definitely was wonderful. And now the other thing about this assessment, as a mental health therapist, you get all kinds of people. And, you know, where else can you go? You know, a husband doesn't listen to his wife. So his wife comes in and we listen to everything she says. So she thinks we're wonderful.
Right.
And the husband comes in. And here's a person that listens to him, so he can feel quite attached to you.
Right.
And
right.
So a lot of times we'll bring in the other person to bring, you know, at that person's permission to get the second opinion in this relationship.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of joint, you know, maybe they come in by themselves, but we do a lot of joint counseling.
So they both have the opportunity to kind of vent their spleen, as it were.
Yeah. And I like
to
see them together so that what one is saying, the other one hears. It's not
mm-hmm.
like she gets to come in and tell me her
side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed mental health. I enjoyed the marital counseling and family. You know,
mm-hmm.
we've had to bring in family sometime. If someone is really having problems and you're getting only their point of view, you need to bring... I had one case, And it was my only, in all those years, it was my only, well, not my only. In all those years, this is a girl that went into Buffalo, and she cheated on a test. She was there for an interview. She was brilliant. I don't know how many master's degrees she had, but she was brilliant. And she cheated on a test and got caught. And on the way home, you don't remember the Father Baker Bridge before it was flattened out, but Father Baker Bridge was high,
mm-hmm.
and there were railroad tracks underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two railings. She climbed over both and jumped.
Mm-hmm.
She did not die.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was she wasn't successful, but she broke almost every bone in her body.
Wow.
So some things you cannot control. You know, things happen outside, and
mm-hmm.
how a person handles it or doesn't handle it, you can't be with them 24/7.
Right,
you
can't
know?
Monitor them.
No,
no matter what they,
them.
If they play a suicide card on you, you have to.
Yeah, and I had brought her parents in, but she didn't really like that. But I needed them in to make it more of what was really going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the things that, and one of the things I think that happens in counseling, you cannot skirt the suicidal thing. If somebody throws out suicidal ideations vaguely,
mm-hmm.
you've gotta sit right down, and everybody, the therapist knows this. I've taught a little class of fellowships on counseling techniques for people that are going into mediumship, because everybody knows if you're going to be a medium, you're going to be a counselor.
Yeah, yeah.
Every medium I think I've heard say, you click that recorder off, and this is a counseling session, because they're bringing in things that you need to sit and listen to, even if you have to refer them out to somebody
else. Or the hotline number.
Or the hotline.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I always say to the young people in fellowship. You have to have a book with names and context. You need
so you
to
can
have
refer
help.
People
you need
to
help.
That.
Yeah, you need help. But not to, when somebody throws it out, you've got to say, wait a minute, we've got to talk about what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people will do it at the door without the doorknob statements, you know, as they're living. Well, I can always kill myself if I don't like it.
Oh.
Wait a minute, you come in, sit down again, we're going to talk about this. But yeah, I think people in counseling, therapists know that you've got to ask those questions. And you got to know what to do if you think you can't protect that person.
So in mediumship, we deal with a lot of people who have a whole range of things that have gone on, or maybe their people in spirit had those issues before they passed, right? Or there are people here on the earth plane that they're close to are going through their difficulties, or they're going through a deep abiding grief that has taken hold of them in that way. And you've dealt with people in that level of deep grief yourself.
Yeah, well, in counseling, the advantage of being in a mental health agency, you're having them come back usually every week for a while, and maybe they'll eventually go every 2 weeks. So they're coming in on a regular basis, and you're setting goals.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the advantages of setting goals that may seem strange is you know when you're finished. Because sometimes people want to come to counseling forever.
Mm,
and so
they found a new best friend.
Of course. Of course. And so you want to make sure. Now, my friend Norina had a wonderful thing. She had an easel in her closet. I didn't have a closet. But she had an easel, and she had their goals written down.
Mm-hmm.
And wonderful to bring that out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just had a sheet, but I would use the sheet like this.
Mm-hmm.
Even common. And people will come in with different issues. You know, what happened that week, you know. And then you're saying, wait a minute, where are we going? What did we start with that
mm-hmm.
you wanted to work on? Is that still an issue? So goals for anybody
mm-hmm.
is where are you at? Are these still the same goals? If they aren't, we can change them. But if you're finished, you're finished. You've done. It's time to close. And closing is very therapeutic. You
yeah.
have to close a session. So setting goals is good in anything, and I know she used to have that easel that came out. I thought that was great. But, you know, in the jail, it was different. one of the things I felt, not a pressure, but a need to assess the suicidal stuff. One of the things in the jail is suicides, and most jails have had to deal with them. And our claim to fame in the 6 years I was there, and as a psychiatrist, I'm not taking all the credit by myself, we never had any successful suicides. We had some attempts. One young man was saving his medicine, and he was putting them, he would take it, I don't know. You know, they can do all kinds of things. They're so sneaky sometimes. When the correctional officer brings them their medicine,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
they would pretend like they took it, but he would save them. And he had a, I think it was a bottle of after, I don't know what it was, a bottle of something. I mean, he was saving them. Well, the correctional officer would come regular intervals and check cells.
Mm-hmm.
When he found out they were coming to check his cell, he took the whole bottle to hide it.
Wow.
He ended up in the hospital,
yeah,
of course. He didn't die.
Right.
But he could.
He OD'd.
He
OD'd.
That.
Yeah.
That was kind of accidental, but, you know, dumb.
Did your radar ever go off with someone that you just got a sense of so-and-so really needs help at this time? Any of your patients? Like, you would just kind of get an alert within yourself, even if you didn't see them that particular moment?
Hmm. Well, I saw them with the psychiatrist. So if
sure.
they were on medicine, they had to come down, and I was sitting with the psychiatrist. So
mm-hmm.
I saw them. And I also saw them, because I was upstairs a lot on the floors
mm-hmm.
where they were.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I would get notes, but I was up there enough, and I would know somebody was in trouble.
Mom radar would go on.
That might have been, but you know, especially the young ones. They're,
yeah.
They're young and they did foolish stuff, and there's always, you know, King of the Hill, and
mm-hmm.
they're just young and immature. So those cells were tough because they were all in there together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I would get a sense, they were great with me in the jail. They really trusted me. If I needed somebody off of a floor, they would let me get them off. I'd transfer them off.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would be up there enough that they could tell me. Or they'd say, I need to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember a particular time when it just came a sense
yeah.
to me. But, you know, sometimes they just want to talk to you to get out of the cell. And I
sure.
guess what I would depend on there is the sense of when I'm being manipulated, when this is really serious.
Right.
And that's what I would probably depend on.
Right.
So that might have been spiritual, or it might have just been common sense or my skills. Or who knows? It's
now,
a combination.
As it relates to healing, you know, many people are seeking healing for their mental state and for whatever traumas they're going through and trying to find a measure of peace or a way to get through all of those. Do you feel that having good mental health professionals help them to get through that journey, or is it something where you really feel that that person has to get to a place of opening to their own healing, even on a mental level and spiritual level?
Yeah. See, I would only, the only ones that I would be exposed to is the people that were coming in for counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you care about people,
mm-hmm.
when you truly care about people, that comes across.
Yes.
And then they're counted. They know they're important. And it might be the only relationship they have.
Mm-hmm.
That they feel they have worth and value.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a therapist can give a client, regardless of whether he's somebody in jail or he's somebody that's just gone through grieving
yeah.
or somebody that's had a psychotic break because of some of those things. I'm not saying it's the only thing. You know, you have your counseling techniques, you have your medication if the person needs it.
Mm-hmm.
But that one-on-one, to me, I thought that was one of the strongest things, is that I cared about them.
Right, that became a healing.
It became
space.
A healing. Yeah,
yeah,
it became a healing. And I think you become a healer in your words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in your actions. I think that's I didn't have to put my hands on people. I don't remember ever doing that in a session. I remember putting my hands on their shoulders. That might have been a healing thing. In fact, I think as I was at the door, sometimes I would put my hand on their shoulder, and some of that was to anchor,
to ground them,
and to anchor what just happened in that session.
Mm-hmm.
And anchoring can be just putting your hand on somebody's shoulder.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, that by doing that, it is reassuring, but it's also enough to ground them in the experience, so that it cements it further for them as a healing experience.
And see, I always saw myself, and I am a very grounded person. And so I brought that. Yeah, you know, you bring all those things with you.
And you're praying for these people.
Definitely.
Whether you tell them that or not, you're praying
That's
for
exactly
them.
Exactly right.
And that
That's
prayer
exactly right.
surrounds them.
But one of the things I was going to talk about is in the jail, because it wasn't like a regular counseling session, they were incarcerated. I might not see them after I did the initial assessment.
Right.
And one of the things I felt very responsible is to make sure when I was doing a suicide evaluation on them, I probably took longer in that area. First of all, they were there because they threatened suicide, but as they were there and I was reassuring them nobody was going to hurt them or they weren't going to be taken advantage of, I could see them calming down. And but the suicidal part, I really probably got more into that. And one of the things I found very important to ask them is, has anybody in your family ever committed suicide?
Yeah.
And I've always believed, and I think this is true, that when a person in the family, many times they would say yes. When somebody in the family attempts or commits suicide, what they bring into the family is the option. That's an option now that wasn't there. So I always did that, and excuse me.
Okay.
My sister committed suicide. This is after that, and so those things. Anyhow, that became a very important thing about who in the family, how do they feel about that, and that was an option that was brought into family that wasn't there before. And so when they left my office, I used to see them maybe for about an hour when I was assessing them. I felt okay. Now, I might go up there and see them again just to see how they're doing, but I felt that they were okay. Because once I said you can send them upstairs, that was on my go, and so I felt responsible. If they needed mental health stuff, I immediately hooked them up. I kept them with me to see the psychiatrist, even though they went back up.
Sure.
So the important thing about the suicidal thing was to make sure, without a doubt, as far as I could. You can only do so much, you know, and reassuring. It doesn't mean something can go up. They can go upstairs and something happens to them, and they might make an attempt, and, you know.
Sure.
But
there are no guarantees.
There's no, and there's where your praying goes. As you leave them, you leave them in healing and grace and protect them up there.
And the angels.
Know, and the angels
and
the saints, whoever you can call on.
Yes.
But so that became a very important part in the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And then monitoring them. The thing is, what we tried to do is make sure mental health people in the Mayville jail were followed through, saw the psychiatrist, were kept on their medication. They had side effects. The correctional officers were great there. They would let us know. They would call and tell us, you know, so on.
A lot of good communication.
Very good. They were very good. And they knew that I would be up there. They knew that I could come up on the floor. I could see them. I could bring them back down.
Sure.
So the 6 years I was there, it was great.
And as it relates to suicide, I'm glad you said that. It doesn't just affect that person who makes that decision.
That's right.
It affects your family, affects your friends, and has
a
long-lasting effect that is very harmful.
Yeah.
Very harmful.
Yeah. But if the person was feeling, If the person was thinking that, they would never attempt. They're not thinking
some
that.
Some would.
If it's manipulation or out of anger, maybe, maybe knowing that. But
then seeing in the review of it and seeing how it affects, I've had people in spirit that have committed that act.
Yes.
And had such a deep abiding regret because of the ramifications sent out.
Yeah.
And so then it behooves that the family members and the friends to find some measure of peace within themselves about that.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And what I worried about and was, of course, my sister's grandchildren and her kids and everything. And it's been a time now, and everybody seems to be healthy, you know. And I never even realized until I think I was told this in a reading, that I needed to forgive my sister. And I said, oh my God, I didn't realize that I needed to forgive my sister. Of course I can forgive my sister in 2 seconds, you know. I took a little longer time to do it, and my friend and I did it together. It was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I didn't think I judged her. I was worried. That was that part.
Yeah.
I was worried about, because my sister and I had a good relationship. I had no bad feelings. I mean, there was no regret. We cared
between
about one another.
No,
I knew that right away because I had such an issue with it. I remember my friend Eileen said, "Dot, was there some leftover feelings?" I said, "No, I never had leftover feelings with my sister Joan about regret in our life together. What I was worried about, I was shocked, and I was worried about people left behind."
Yeah.
That's what happened. So anyhow, I went through that little process again, the spiritual process.
And sometimes it is
of forgiving.
To forgive people when they commit that act and then they hurt the people here.
Yeah.
It's hard to forgive them for hurting the other people that you love.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. I thought I was pretty okay. But when that was said to me, I thought, well, I don't mind going back through that again.
Mm-hmm.
And if it just clears the air, then that's fine. I'm very willing
to
do it.
It can very much clear the energy
off of
you and other people when you let go of those things.
So my friend and I did it together, and there was a few other things that I threw in there just to make sure there was no loose ends. And that was fine. You know, that was fine.
I know we just have a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the folks today in regard to mental health and healing and things that, I mean, I know we could talk a long time about the different spiritual things that you've had in that. I'm glad you shared what you did today.
Yeah. I think you don't have to be a therapist. It's the people that you meet every day that are having problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be the therapist. You don't really want to develop. You want them to go to see a therapist. You know, sometimes people can talk to you about their problems, but when you see that they're talking about the same things over and over, then you realize it's not helpful.
Yes.
And this happened to me.
Venting and complaining.
Yes. This happened to me a very long time ago. I had a friend that was very needy, and she used to call me about every damn decision she wanted to make. And I thought, well, so-and-so, this maybe, and I thought, what is going on here?
Dependency.
Am I feeling good because I'm telling, and it was hard. This was way before when I had little kids and you were home all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She used to call, and I thought, what am I getting out of this? This doesn't sound very healthy for her. And so then I had to keep my mouth shut, and I was,
that's okay.
What do you think you should do?
Yes.
What do you think? I'm interested in what you think, you know? And so, but when somebody keeps telling you the same thing over and over again, it's not helpful.
They've kind of gotten into a negative pattern that they're getting something out of it.
It's not always good to let them just rant and rave because nothing's happened with
That's true.
But you can be a good listener and you can send lots of, you don't have to put your hands, send lots of healing.
Absolutely.
So I've been very fortunate in mental health.
I'm glad you mentioned about that because people can form a dependency, like a codependency with another person.
That's right.
And it's not always helpful.
Setting limits.
And when you set a limit on someone who's a habitual complainer or is going through a very difficult time in their life and they're obsessing about whatever that is, and they can feel cut off from their other loved ones, because someone's not hearing them. Yeah. Someone's not listening to them grind.
Little things like, you know, you've mentioned this before.
Yeah.
And I hope it's helpful. But keep mentioning the same thing I don't think is.
Yeah.
You know.
We have to kind of get off the broken record
exactly.
of that and be empowered. And I just want to mention this real briefly. I'll just ignore that. I'll just say one more thing. Because sometimes people have that desire for their loved ones in spirit to tell them what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And that can't, it's not necessarily a healthy thing for them. They need to get to a place of empowerment so they listen to their own souls and really feel the role of the divine in their own lives. And I think that to some degree mental health can assist a person in that.
Yes, very much so.
To some degree, it can help people.
Well, I think if a mother or a family member always told that person what to do, that dependency would certainly continue afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think even the medium can be the therapist in that situation.
Yes. And I have had therapists refer their clients to me to have readings so that they can move from their grief.
Oh, I could see that really easy. I could see that happening really easy, referring somebody.
And so there's a level of mental health healing that happens with certain readings, and it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
So
thank you
so much for sharing about
that
today.
I hope it's been helpful. I feel like rambled a little bit, but that's been my life.
That's
rambling,
what conversation is
rambling
about, right?
Through Dot's life.
We got to, thank you for the glimpse into those moments
you
shared with
I've
people.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's really wonderful. I want to let people know that next week my guest is Gretchen Clark, and we will be talking about what happens when you die. Because many people have the question.
I've been into that.
Yeah. They have a question about, well, where are they? And what are they doing once they have kind of crossed over, as it were? So we're going to be discussing that. So tune in next week, same time, same channel here on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, Wednesday at 10 a.m. next week. Thank you, everyone, for your kind attention, and thank you, Dot, for sharing your beautiful soul with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We appreciate it. God bless everyone, and have a wonderful week. Bye-bye.
I like those little lights that bubble up.
Oh, so that's them liking?